I just want to say I am thrilled to be your new captain. I want this to be an efficient ship, but also one that you're glad to be serving on. Lieutenant Commander Bordas, your entire species is male, isn't it?
That is correct, sir.
Probably not a lot of arguments about leaving the toilet seat up and that kind of thing, right?
Mocklands urinate only once per year.
Really? That's, I mean, I'm up 2-3 times a night.
That is unfortunate.
It is.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, hugging the donkey.
Well, that brings us right to this week's conundrum, the Orville versus Star Trek.
Yeah, Cam, obviously Seth MacFarlane's new TV series, The Orville, just premiered.
What? I thought this was about Orville Redenbacher.
I wish it was.
I've been eating popcorn all week in preparation for this.
I can smell it off your breath at this point. But sir,
that's not the popcorn.
This show is such an ode to Star Trek. Seth MacFarlane has long been a fan of Star Trek. If you watch any of the behind-the-scenes kind of Blu-ray extras that you have on the next-gen sets, he's on audio commentaries, he's moderating writers' panels, he's been a character on Star Trek Enterprise. Yeah. This guy loves Star Trek. He gets to do essentially his own version of a Star Trek The Next Generation TV series with The Orville. I think this is totally within our avenue of tackling Star Trek. And what we really want to address here, I think, is whether Star Trek fans would like The Orville and whether this kind of captures the spirit of Star Trek and really what I think Seth MacFarlane is trying to do here.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach to a TV show. I can't really think of a good comparison, really. For has there been a show along these lines before?
Red Dwarf, maybe.
Yeah,
I would say that Red Dwarf is more of a. And I'm not super familiar with Red Dwarf. I've seen more like bits and pieces of episodes as opposed to entire episode, but it was more of an out-and-out parody of kind of the sci-fi genre.
Right.
Where I think this is more of an homage with some sort of comedic elements.
Some sort?
Some sort, yeah.
Maybe we should just give our own background on Seth MacFarlane.
Okay.
What has been your experience with the work, the oeuvre of Seth MacFarlane?
You know, I was one of those folks that back when Family Guy premiered after the Super Bowl back in, like, I don't know, 98, 99 or so?
Sure.
I thought the pilot episode of Family Guy was hilarious. When I was like a 15-year-old, I loved Family Guy. I thought it was really funny. And then I have to be honest, like as I got older, maybe the comedy didn't work so well for me. So I liked Ted, the first film. But beyond that, I'm not a huge Seth MacFarlane connoisseur, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, like I was, like you, really big into Family Guy when it first premiered. I watched it right up until it got canceled the first time.
Right, yeah.
I think I might have watched a little bit when it came back, maybe?
Yeah, I watched it a little bit.
A little bit, not much. I just trailed off. It was never a show that I was like, a hard, like, I'm done with this show. It's just like, I don't know, maybe just the age I was at, life kind of got in the way, and it just wasn't a priority for me to watch anymore, and I just stopped watching it. I didn't watch American Dad. I didn't watch the Cleveland Show. I will say, like, I liked Seth MacFarlane, say, as, like, the Oscar host. I thought he did a really good job on that a couple years ago. I didn't care for Ted. Didn't see Ted 2. And I remember seeing the trailers for A Million Ways to Die in the West and thinking it looked like the worst thing ever made. I ended up watching it on home video, and I actually didn't think it was that bad.
Okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was kind of a case of, like, it's just like something isn't quite gelling. You know, I feel like Seth MacFarlane, when he's on fire, things kind of click into place, like early Family Guy.
Yeah.
But for some reason I found with the movies, that wasn't the case, that they felt shaggy and kind of half-formed.
The other thing that's worth bringing up with regards to our experience with Seth MacFarlane and the podcast, though, is that you and I, we had an episode about the future of Star Trek and whether Star Trek, and this is long before I think Discovery was kind of officially announced or anything like this.
Yeah.
And we're discussing how I think Star Trek needs a bit of a shepherd.
Right.
And we actually, you know, I mean, there's ideas like, say, one Ben Stiller, who's a big Star Trek fan, who could kind of shepherd the series. We had J.J. Abrams for a little while. And then we actually got into Seth MacFarlane and talking a lot about how maybe he was the right guy, not necessarily to be like writing week to week and show running, but kind of being like the guy who goes up against executives and says, hey, you know what, this is what Star Trek's about, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he produced, or was one of the producers on Cosmos.
Yes.
So we know he's like very passionate about hard sci-fi too. It's not just like he's only into kind of goofy stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Cosmos was not a laugh riot,
to
the best of my knowledge.
No. Which also involved one Brandon Braga.
Right.
Who, and let's be honest, let's take a look at some of the credits involved with this particular series, The Orville. Brandon Braga is an executive producer. You also have David Goodman, who's along for the ride here. Andre Baramas. These are the last two gentlemen I just mentioned previously wrote for Star Trek as well. This features Penny Johnson-Gerald, who I cannot believe it for the life of me. She has not aged one bit since we last saw her in Deep Space Nine as Cassidy Yates.
Yeah.
But power to him. Seth MacFarlane has not aged one bit since he started Family Guy 20 years ago as well. I don't know what this magic potion is that these guys have. Do they have quantum field technology, Cam?
I have suspicions.
Okay.
But I don't know what it... I'm not going to go on the record.
I'm amazed by these two actors.
Penny Johnson, I would just say, has aged very gracefully.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
Okay.
The other one, okay. I got some theories.
Gotcha. Well, why don't we jump right into it? I don't know if we're going to be totally fair to our listeners out there if we just don't give our initial thoughts, and then we can kind of take a deeper dive into it.
Yeah.
Cam, just tell me, walking away from this, you and I, we just sat down and we watched it for the last hour. What are you walking away feeling like at this point?
Well, I went in to watch it, and like I've been fairly vocal on the podcast that I wasn't particularly anticipating the show. I didn't think any of the marketing did a great job selling it as a show that I would watch, especially week to week. And I was actually shocked when I found out it was an hour-long show.
Yeah, so was I. To me, I thought this was going to be like a sitcom sort of
like
deal.
A half-hour Galaxy Quest-esque type show. Yeah, that's kind of what I was expecting. And then when I found out it wasn't, then I just got confused. And I tried to be a little kinder because, look, a lot of the shows I love, the pilots were not great.
Right.
You know, look at Star Trek itself. Encounter at Farpoint, not a great episode. You know, there's quite a few Star Trek, you know, episodes that you could say, maybe not the best way to begin the series.
Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, the first Seinfeld is weird. The first Friends episode is weird, too. Yeah. Like, you know, they're finding...
Did you grab a spoon?
Every day I grab a spoon.
That's good. Because
that became my philosophy from that moment onwards. I didn't want to be too harsh just based on a pilot because it is weird that, you know, you think as your pilot, your first step out of the gate, you want to be as good as possible. But then I think of our first podcast, and then I go, well, maybe not. That's not the case.
I'll take blame for that, Cam. But, you know, I think it's difficult to come out with episode number one to be fully formed.
Yes.
I think that is a huge challenge. There's very few shows that have actually done that successfully.
So my take on episode one of The Orville, I found the show baffling.
Okay.
In that I really don't know what it's trying to even achieve.
It's neither fish nor fowl to you?
Yeah, like to me... And we're going to get deeper into it. But, like, the comedy, I don't think a single joke landed for me.
Okay. A couple jokes landed for me, though. Like, I did chuckle a few times throughout this.
And we'll get
into
it.
The robotic race that is legendarily racist, that got a smirk out of me.
Okay. To me, it's just like...
That's Cam's very condescending, patronizing voice right there, listeners.
It's trying so hard, like incredibly hard, overbearingly hard, to echo moments and, you know, characters from Next Generation. And there's a couple scenes that like ripped right out of the motion picture.
Oh, I think we know the scenes, yeah.
And so it's like, are you a parody? No, we want to be our own thing. Well, you're not being your own thing. So, like, what are you trying to do?
Maybe is it an hour-long homage?
But it's not an homage because it's going for these comedic beats and playing up the character types we've seen on the show.
No, but I would say that there's some subversion going on here. Like, say, commenting on kind of the tropes that's going on within Star Trek. That, like, for example, when the Krill commander
you mean, yeah.
is on the view screen and he's like, hey, can you take a few steps to the right there? Because honestly,
comic gold unspooling before
but
me.
I do appreciate the fact that they are commenting on the fact that every time somebody comes on sure. the view screen, they are perfectly framed on Star Trek.
But this was that joke delivered well?
I thought it was okay.
Oh my God.
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
Cam, go on.
No, and so
I feel as if I'm going to somehow turn into the Orville apologist on this series, but I'm totally intrigued by your feelings on this.
But to me, it's like the show is an hour long. It wants you to be somewhat invested in the stakes of what is going on, but you have all of these kind of really goofy or just barely written jokes undercutting any potential drama of the situation. Why am I invested in this? This is not a half hour. Like judging from the trailers, I thought it was going to be very like rapid fire.
Right.
It was not. It had these long, brutally awkward scenes, I thought, of characters interacting that just felt clunky.
What would be like a good example? Did you think the meeting between Victor Garber and Seth MacFarlane at the beginning?
That was definitely awkward.
Okay.
I was thinking the meeting of the two helmsmen.
Sure.
One of their quarters.
I kind of like that scene in that, like, I think, and this is my big fear about Star Trek Discovery,
yeah,
is that we're not going to get moments like that, those kind of like slow moments where it's just two characters interacting and they've got kind of space to be each other. We saw that a lot on Star Trek The Next Generation.
But these aren't characters. They're caricatures.
Okay.
Like they have there's no depth to anything I'm seeing here.
In episode one.
Sure, but in the original series or in Next Generation, there is depth to the character of Data, the character of Picard. You're like, there's things we can read into these characters, especially Crusher, too, her relationship with Picard.
Okay.
There's some depth there that there's a reason they cast, you know, like Shakespearean actors and theater-trained actors and gave it an earnest tone. It's because it's dramatic. It's drawing you into an overall story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our adventures with these characters. In this case, I'm watching smug caricatures make lame wisecracks and undercut any drama to a situation. Like, to pull that off, you got to be really funny. You got to be giving your A game.
Sure, I can give you that at this point. Why don't I jump into my overall thoughts?
Yeah.
I had very similar thoughts as you did when it came to the marketing.
Yeah.
I wasn't really with it. We also saw the reviews coming out from the critics. And generally, I find that if critics don't like something, it's usually because it's not very good. Mm-hmm. And if the reviews are positive, it's generally because it's pretty good, you know, and there may be things that I don't watch week to week, even though the critics love it.
Sure.
So I had very low expectations going in, and maybe that was the key here. It actually kind of surprised me in that, like, I can actually see myself tuning in next week. I'm curious as to where the show goes. This is episode one.
Right.
I am wondering how this develops over the next 12 episodes. It just completed 13 episodes. We're going to get them no matter what, even if the show's canceled in a few weeks.
Do you think it will be canceled?
I don't know if there's much of an audience for a show like this in current television. This is why I think the CBS All Access format is genius on the part of CBS.
Mm.
I know a lot of fans are going to disagree with that because they don't want to spend an extra $6 to watch Star Trek every month.
Yeah.
But
Believe me, people, we're in Canada. If I were an American, I wouldn't want to pay $6 a month either. I would feel the same way.
Sure.
I would do it, but I'd be grumbling the whole time.
Sure.
So I understand. You
know, but I was generally kind of surprised. I thought the show was light enough. You know, I thought that...
It was airless, yes.
I thought this show was... It was not painful to watch. And maybe my expectations were just so low on this, but I actually... I'm not going to say that I was just delighted watching this throughout the entire hour, but I thought it was actually okay.
Did you not feel like you were watching people just struggle on screen? That's what
struggle
I felt
on screen.
Like.
Well, give me an example.
Like, just
here.
Actors floundering with, like, brutally bad jokes and, like, just dialogue that does not work.
No. Like,
really?
I
felt like, you know, when you're at a stand-up comedy showcase or something and there's a, you know, early stand-up comedian who's struggling, that's what I felt like I was watching a lot of the time.
Okay. I think maybe the one who struggled with kind of maybe delivery or whatever, maybe Seth MacFarlane, where he's the one who's given the most punchlines, and I don't know how funny those were.
Right.
So, I mean...
I thought Scott Grimes as, was it Helmsman Gordon Malloy?
There's a couple...
really struggling.
Was he... Okay, but Scott Grimes is a good actor, though.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe there's lots of good actors on this show.
So, struggling with the dialogue, I mean, I don't think... Okay, if your question is, was he given, like, A-plus material? I'd say probably not. But I didn't think that it was a skin-crawling experience to watch him on screen or anything like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, honestly, Cam, no one's more surprised than I am that the fact that I actually thought the show was okay. Like, I'll say it again. I can see myself tuning in next week and see where it goes from there. The critics were not kind, and they got the first three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how I feel after two more weeks of this.
Right.
But I thought the show was light enough where I kind of get what they're trying to do. They don't want to do the super serious Star Trek sort of stuff. And I think maybe why don't we segue into maybe one of the big questions that we should answer is, do they capture the spirit of Star Trek in, I think, the way that they are trying to go for here? Cam, your thoughts here. You've got, for listeners, Cam's got this thoughtful look on his face right now where he wants to be diplomatic about his response. But Cam, you tell me your overall thoughts. Is it successful at capturing the spirit of Star Trek in maybe the way not Gene Roddenberry or, say, Rick Berman was trying to do, but in the way that Seth MacFarlane is interpreting it? Does he succeed at executing maybe what he sets out to do here?
I mean, I think he understands the aesthetics of Star Trek.
Okay. And we can get into that a little bit later on.
I think he understands the visuals, the idea of a diverse crew. You know, missions of diplomacy. I think he understands that that's what Star Trek's about. Did I get any sense of, like, philosophy behind the show or anything? No, not really.
Yeah, what was the overall message at the end of this episode?
I don't know.
Forgive your ex?
I guess.
Okay.
I guess.
Is it so it's not super philosophical as Troy looking at the jellyfish in space and getting empathic with them, right?
I don't recall women being referred to as bitches multiple times on Next Generation.
Does this pass the Bechdel test?
No.
I don't even think two women spoke to each other at any sort of instance once.
No.
Which is, unless you count telling the her patient she was dead from old age.
Well, I mean, this may be... is part of the problem with Seth MacFarlane. He's very driven by kind of like frat house comedy.
Yeah.
Frat house comedy traditionally is not particularly good with female characters.
Yeah.
But if you're going to tackle Star Trek, and look, we've had many debates on this show about how the various incarnations of Star Trek have tackled its female characters. But this was not the way to do it. If you're going to do the Orville, like it feels like Seth MacFarlane wanting to do this TNG homage, but also not going outside of his comfort zone in terms of writing and how to approach any characters.
Do you think it would have been better on his part to just go more earnest with everything as opposed to... I don't know,
because if you go more earnest, it's even more of a ripoff.
Okay. I just wonder if it's
walking a fine line between shameless ripoff and homage. And if you go earnest, then it's really a ripoff. At least this way, they can just go, no, it's a lighthearted homage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, there are people online, or at least one critic, I can't recall who wrote this little stinging critique, but they described it essentially as Seth MacFarlane trying to do cosplay.
It felt like that.
Yeah.
It felt like, in many ways, like a fan film.
To a certain degree, yeah. I would think that, look, I think the problem is maybe he tried to undercut some of the seriousness of it with, like, some jokes. And I don't think they were meant to be, like, killer, like, bomb drops of jokes or anything like that, you know?
Well, they were dropping bombs.
Oh, yeah. You know. So, look, I wonder if... Yeah, maybe that's like a good debate if homage versus ripoff. You know,
yeah.
I think the show would have been a little bit more successful if had just tried to hit that earnest button a few more times.
Why do you think he felt so compelled to mold it so closely to TNG? Like, why not take it to a little more of an original path?
This is in my notes, Cam.
Okay.
At the very beginning of the episode, the second scene, literally, when he's meeting with the Admiral Victor Garber, and Garber gives him the command.
Yeah.
And Ed Mercer says, I've wanted this since I was a child. I've been envisioning myself, you know, serving aboard a ship ever since I was a child. That's Seth MacFarlane right there.
Yeah.
This is why Seth MacFarlane is doing this. This is the closest thing.
But he's a creative guy. He's a smart guy. Like, I've seen it in his past work.
Yeah.
You know, like when he made Family Guy, he didn't just completely rip off The Simpsons.
No. Well.
But this, I mean, look.
There's an episode of South Park that I know you've never seen, which is Cartoon Wars, for those who know it, which is an amazing critique of Family Guy comedy. But
right.
I I
know the one with the manatees.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard of it. Yeah.
But I think it's clear that Seth MacFarlane is a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah, but I mean,
and he's trying to bring back the spirit of the Next Generation in science fiction in a way that we haven't really seen since the 1990s.
Sure, but like I just think of all these great creators who have molded incredible things. They didn't just take the same thing and just replicate it with like a slight aesthetic, you know, twist on it. You know, when George Lucas is remaking Kurosawa stories, he's making it a Star Wars.
Yeah, but then he comes back with The Phantom Menace.
Well, he ran out of Kurosawa material for that one. But you know what I mean? Like, and that goes down the line. You know, all the time you'll hear artists talk about, you know, this film was inspired by this film. And you can see the parallels. You know, we did a panel and an episode on Star Trek episodes inspired by films.
Right.
And you can see how they took a story and created something original out of it.
So does this go back to that statement that I made earlier where, to you, this doesn't feel like fish nor fowl?
Yeah, no, that's true.
So what do you think would have been the right tactic for him to take with the Orville?
Half-hour sitcom, I think.
Half-hour sitcom?
I think
so. Where it's more comedically minded as opposed to sci-fi minded?
I think play to your strengths. I mean, just judging from what I've seen, just this 1 hour, and that's all I have to go off.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane is not someone who I would trust to write earnest, dramatic storytelling. At least he hasn't exhibited a real like knack for it yet.
But I mean, although what would he have done in the past that would have shown that?
Well, nothing. And I still haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
Because, well, like, we've seen the movie Galaxy Quest, you know, quite a few times.
Yeah.
I think Galaxy Quest had more stakes to it than it felt like this episode did.
Yeah, but is Galaxy Quest in the Orville not two different sorts of, I guess, dramatizations?
Sure.
They're different stories, essentially, aren't they?
Let's look at Galaxy Quest. There was the creator of Galaxy
Quest. That is an homage to Star Trek.
It is.
Okay.
But you can tell that whoever made it, is it Dean Parizeau,
yes,
I think, directed it. Did he write it?
I think he had a writing credit on it.
So let's say co-writer. But, you could tell that everyone involved in it loved Star Trek.
Yeah.
But when they created something kind of original that felt a little outside and had some interesting perspectives on fandom and how, you know, the con scene keeps these people alive. And, interesting looks at how the actors would behave in these situations. Like, it was a twist on it.
You're right.
This was not, like, this,
yeah,
didn't,
no,
this didn't even bring that level of inventiveness.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But what I hope to see, though, is that they do some more Star Trek subversion in the future. That's why I can say moments like calling like that robot race legendarily racist.
Sure.
I can appreciate that. And like, they're just calling a spade a spade. Same with asking the Krill commander to step a few steps to the right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I hope that they try to subvert some of those Star Trek tropes and kind of maybe expand beyond that though. Look,
do you think there's like six seasons of like material for this show?
I think six seasons of any TV series currently airing is like, it's like a 1 in 500 shot at this point.
Yeah.
Very few series will accomplish that.
Very true.
And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I don't know. What is Cam? What is the audience for the Orville? Who is the audience, essentially?
I think the audience, because
maybe there's two questions here. Like, who are they aiming for and who do you think's likely tuning in?
I think, this has gotten a lot of attention on Star Trek forums and on, Facebook. We've seen a lot of discussion, a lot of back and forth. A lot of people, I think, were responding more to the brightness of this series, at least visually, compared to the darker looking Discovery. And also the fact Discovery costs money, and this doesn't if you have basic cable. And so the audience, I think they are going to tune in. I think a lot of people that are just love TNG, period. Like, I don't mean like the hardcores analyze every episode for its morals, messages, and all that sort of stuff. I don't think they're going to maybe be tuned into it, but I think people that just love hanging out with TNG characters might enjoy it.
So do you think that's...
I think they'll give it a leeway that other people might not. But I also think a lot of, sort of the, your kind of Big Bang Theory type audience might enjoy it.
Okay. I think the problem is, like, you figure the audience is going to be next gen watchers.
I think that's that demographic is kind of locked down to watch it. At least a lot of them.
I mean, the problem is I think the TV landscape is so fractured now. It's going to be very difficult to attract all of those people, the 20 million people that
I'm not saying all of them. I'm just saying, you know, I feel like TNG viewers, a lot of them will.
The audience that they do get would have been people that previously watched Next Generation. But what I'm saying that is that the TV landscape is so fractured right now. I think that's going to be a very tiny audience that actually tunes in. Yeah. They may also be aiming for, and I think this is what the marketing is trying to do, but the Seth MacFarlane audience, mm-hmm. which I think as many complaints as maybe people had over the marketing of the show, I think it's a lot smarter to aim for the Seth MacFarlane audience than the former Star Trek The Next Generation audience.
I am curious how that fares too, because, you know, you look at the box office on both Ted 2 and A Million Ways to Die in the West, and they did not perform well. And so it seems like the Seth MacFarlane audience is totally down for Family Guy, American Dad. I think Cleveland Show got canceled, didn't it? I don't think that one lasted. But at least for those two, I don't know that they're as attached to like Seth MacFarlane, the actor, and his vehicles.
From a marketing perspective, I still think it's smart for them to
They're going to at least tune in off the top.
Yeah, for that. Look, I think for the longevity of a series, I think you've got a tough road to toe at this point, because I think it's going to be a very small audience just automatically that you're aiming for. So,
and what percent do you think is won over by, you know, the fact it's a TNG homage?
Let's take Tyler and Cam, for example. You are not. I'm willing to tune in. I'll say at least the first three episodes. I did not find this excruciating at all. And I think maybe you found it more along the lines of excruciating.
Excruciating is a strong word. Okay. I'm not going to use it for that. When I say excruciating, I'm thinking like the episode The Fight with Chakotay.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like the thing where I'm so bored that I'm just losing my mind watching it. That's what when I think excruciating. It was just, to me, just like it fell so flat that I'm like, oh, this is a very unconfident show. I'm not really that interested in watching it.
Did it fall flat in that maybe the comedy didn't work for you?
Nope.
Or the storytelling of the sci-fi aspects of it didn't work for you? Was it the dramatic?
No, there was no drama in it for me.
So then tell me what
there's
was it?
There's nothing in it. That's the thing. It's a complete flat line of a show.
No, but tell me specifically what fell flat for you, though.
Everything you named. To me, the jokes aren't funny. The drama's not there. The characters weren't interesting.
So then why is this not an excruciating experience for you to sit
through? I can watch unbelievably unpleasant things. Believe me, I watch far worse movies. It's just like, it's like going to see the movie Couples Retreat. And you walk out and you're like, yeah, that was a nothing of a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's out of my memory like a day later.
So to you, there's just really nothing.
There's just, it's Teflon. It's Teflon. There's nothing to hang on to at all. Like, you're asking me to have a passionate opinion on something that's like a blip.
But it's curious that you seem to have a passionate negative opinion on this, on something that you say did not resonate with you.
Well, I can explain exactly why I don't like it. Okay. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. To me, I just thought it was, I'll just keep saying this because it's easy. It's like, I thought it was a perfectly okay show. Like, you know, it's perfectly fine to watch. I'm not having this kind of emotional sort of like, it was awful sort of reaction. It's just kind of like, there you go. It felt to me enough like a Star Trek homage, where like I can see what they're trying to get at. And like, do they have a chance of accomplishing that? And I think they do.
Really?
You say really in a way that... do you think what I'm trying to say is this is trying to be an exact replica of
Star Trek
The Next Generation?
Not at all. No.
All right.
No, but that would it would never be a replica of TNG.
So what you're saying is based on what you just saw, is that there's no hope whatsoever that this could be a show with any sort of value.
No.
There's nothing that could ever...
Like, I won't be watching again. Like, that's it for me.
So, based on episode one, you're saying, like, this has zero promise whatsoever.
I will check in with you down the road and let me know if it ever gets good, because based on this, I would never watch it again.
Okay. Look, and that's how you feel. You know? So, I can't argue with that, but it's like, I am curious that you feel, as after 45 minutes, you're like, there's no hope whatsoever for this series.
Look, let's be honest. People at home may not know this. I don't watch a lot of TV.
Sure.
Period. I can't be bothered investing in most TV shows based on the amount of time that they, you know, a series is. I will watch the Star Trek series. I have various shows I watch, but it's very hard. You've tried to get me to watch so many shows over time. It takes me forever to get around to this
stuff. Cam has never watched The Wire.
Nope.
He's never watched The Sopranos.
Nope.
He's never watched Deadwood.
I have The Sopranos, the entire series at home, as well as Deadwood.
Never watched either of them. He's never watched Mad Men. I think one of the few prestige shows that you have watched is Breaking Bad.
Yep. Boardwalk Empire.
Which is, that falls more into a, I think Boardwalk Empire is a good example of a show that's trying to be prestige.
Right.
You know, where it's almost there. There's so many great moments, but it doesn't quite get into that same sphere that you would put a show like The Sopranos or Mad Men in.
Sure.
And I think maybe that's kind of what we're going to have with The Orville. I don't ever think that The Orville's going to reach the heights of The Next Generation.
Right.
But I think I could put it... It's very much like a Boardwalk Empire sort of show. Not in that they're...
Oh, my God.
No, Cam, you're not interpreting me correctly. It's a Boardwalk Empire show in that I can see what it's striving for.
Right.
It's never going to be up there with, like, say, a Sopranos or the Mad Men, but I can see what it's trying to accomplish, and I can appreciate it for at least that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying Boardwalk Empire equals... The Orville.
No, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I understand.
But
I understand.
It's like I can understand that it's never going to be a Star Trek The Next Generation, but at least if it can, I think the key here is if it knows what it is, and I don't know if it knows what it is just yet. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do by episode one. Cam, let me ask you this. If you watch Star Trek The Next Generation episode one, I suspect you would have written it off then and there.
Well, it depends.
You would have watched it and be like, there's no hope for this show.
The thing is, I'm invested in Discovery. Say Discovery comes out and I don't like the first episode, which I may not. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I'm invested in seeing where that show goes as a fan of Star Trek. I just have zero investment in the Orville.
But let's say that you had never been a fan of Star Trek before.
Right.
You've never been a fan of the Orville before.
Sure.
Would you have watched Encounter at Farpoint and written it off? I think you would have.
It depends on the circumstances.
Encounter at Farpoint is not a very good episode.
Yeah, and that's an interesting question. And you know, I also have to take into account, am I watching it now or am I watching it when it premieres, say, in, like, you know, the 80s? Because I would have a different view of it back then, right? Because, you know, if I'm watching it now, I know where the show's going. You have to assume I'm watching it at a time where...
No, but you did watch it much later in life, though.
I did.
And you knew that a lot of people had very good things to say about it.
About Encounter at Farpoint?
No, Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Exactly, I did.
I knew that
the introduction may be rough, but I know where it's going.
But if you're a 36-year-old Cam watching Encounter at Farpoint back in 1987, you would have written the show off.
Did I watch the original series?
No.
Okay, I didn't watch the original series. I don't think I would have been watching it in the first place then.
No, but I'm saying, you were? Just like the Orville. I'm trying to compare Star Trek: The Next Generation to the Orville here.
I don't know. You know what? I'm going to disagree with you. And I'm going to disagree with you. And I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Because I think there's enough in that show that would give you some hope. Like the characters of Data, the characters of Picard, characters of Crusher, who we get to see introduced in ways that I think speak to where their characters might go and may be interesting. There's dramatic stakes to those characters. Tasha Yar, who's fantastic in the first episode. Q, who's fantastic in the first episode. Is the overall plot to do with Farpoint very good? No. But I remember watching a lot of 2-hour pilots back in the day when they used to crank those out like crazy for hour-long dramas, and I don't recall thinking that the 2-hour premiere was my favorite episode of that series, but I would keep watching because I was kind of sucked in by where the premise could go.
But with the difference between that, and I would agree with you, like I watch Patrick Stewart on screen, and I see what he does with Picard, and I'm intrigued where this guy could go.
And there are great scenes. You know, think of the scene of him and Riker together. You know, their first scene together, discussing sort of the future of their, you know, collaboration on the ship. Like, there's great character dynamics on that show.
Okay. I'll just say...
I mean, what are the character dynamics in this? In the Orville,
Cam,
that I'm hanging on to?
I feel like I've been, like, pitted in this position of being this Seth MacFarlane apologist, which I keep going back to the fact that, like, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a perfectly okay thing.
But I will fight for Seth MacFarlane in other properties. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like I think he has done some great stuff in the past. This is just not for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he really, really stunk this one up badly.
No, but you just said it did nothing for you. But now you're saying it stunk it up badly, though.
If it does nothing, it stunk. Like, it did not work. You've put out something that did not work on its intended ways. So you've stunk it up.
Okay, but
you only get one first impression in life.
Okay, no, it's just you keep going back and forth on how this does nothing for you, but then you keep saying, "Oh, it's really bad."
Yes, there's an easy connection for at least in my mind to make. Something can be bad that does nothing for you. It's because it's bad that does it. I'm not talking egregiously awful or eye-rollingly like, "Oh my God, I can't believe what I'm watching." Yeah. It's a bad show. Like, it was a bad pilot. That's what I'm saying.
Mm. And for there, to say it's a bad pilot, I would say no. It was an okay pilot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it convinced me to not watch the show. So for me, it was a bad pilot.
Sure, sure. Look, that's how you feel. So I mean, like, I can't, like, I'm not gonna.
You know, it's interesting. We agree so much on this podcast.
I know.
This is gonna be a real, like, milestone episode. It'll be like,
no. Here's the, I'm genuinely surprised that I'm not feeling the same way that you did.
Right.
You know, like, I honestly went into it, with my mind thinking, like, maybe I'm not going to like this, and I thought it was fine. I didn't think there was anything egregiously awful about it. I think there's a lot of problems with it.
Okay.
But nothing egregiously awful with it.
But you are a guy also who always tell me there's too much great television out there to watch mediocre television.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and I've got no excuse. I really have no comeback.
I get it. Like, I get it. Like, I'm not going to go after you because I know that I'm an easy mark for things that... Look, I watch a lot of really bad shark movies.
Sure.
Because I'm a huge shark person. Like, you show me an aquatic thriller, I'll watch it. Even if, you know, it's considered lousy. So, like, I can understand why that something that is a TNG homage, like, to you would be something worth more exploring than maybe to me.
I think a good comparison, though, would be Bates Motel, where, like,
sure.
you lent me season one of Bates Motel.
Okay.
And I think you got it as, like, a gift from your sister on, like, Blu-ray or something.
Yeah, on Christmas, I think. Yeah, one year.
I watched it. I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I devoured that series.
And then you kept asking me, are you keeping up? I was just like, no.
Yeah, I love that series.
And it didn't do anything for me. Yeah. I don't think it was a bad show. It just didn't. But the fact that it didn't do anything for me, it didn't make me think like you were. That means it's a bad show. I just thought, yeah, it's okay. It didn't really do. There's too many other, like, exceptional series on for me to watch, like, an okay show.
Right.
You know, and I wonder if that's kind of where we're going, but it's just I can watch Bates Motel and think it's okay. You can watch The Orville and say, well, it doesn't do anything for me, which makes it a bad show. But I wouldn't watch Bates Motel and think it's a bad show because it didn't really do anything for me, though.
Sure.
But I think the difference here is, like, you're far more into, say, and I really, really like the movie Psycho, but would it be accurate to say that you're much more of a Hitchcock fan than Tyler?
Definitely.
Yeah. So maybe you're being hooked into this from a certain kind of fan perspective. Like, you are way more into all these Marvel movies than I am.
Sure.
I watch all these Marvel movies, and I'm just like, it's a perfectly fine movie. Nothing super bad about it. Nothing super awesome. But you, generally speaking, you love these Marvel movies.
Love is a strong word. I enjoy all of them. Yes, for the most part.
Yeah, but to me, I'm just like,
I would never say I love any of them. I don't think very many of them make my top 10 of the year list.
Probably the Guardians movies do.
Not the first one didn't.
Okay.
I haven't written this year, so I really
can't
speak.
You're a big fan of Civil War.
Civil War did. I think Civil War and Avengers are the only two that ever made it on.
But you're much more hooked into, say, the comic book scene than I am. So
definitely.
Maybe you're seeing kind of things come to life in a way that hooks you in a way that...
I would also argue, though, I also get angrier than when I see it done badly.
And you know what? And when you bring that up, I just kind of, like, shrug my shoulders.
Yeah.
Cam, I'll say this. You brought up Batman v Superman so many times,
yeah.
And to me, I was just
I was outraged. Or the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
And to me, I was just like, whatever. Yeah. You know, like, they weren't very good. And then I stopped thinking about them ever again.
Yeah.
You know, so I just wonder if it's our own personal tastes and inclinations, which makes me, because I got into Star Trek through Next Gen. You got into it through TOS. This is such more, so much more of a TNG homage where I can appreciate what they're going for.
Yes.
And I can think maybe they're not 100% successful, but I'm not going to completely write off a show as a stinker. Even though, believe me, I think there's problems with their show. And it's, like I said, the fact that all I can muster is, it's okay. Look, this is not like a gold medal that I'm handing it over here. But I have to believe that there's reasons why we may be inclined in different avenues. Cam, this is probably the most we've ever disagreed about like anything on the podcast. And it has to be about the Orville of all things, is fascinating. Well, okay.
Let's talk about the cast.
Yes, okay.
Because I do have some good things to say.
Sure, yeah.
Like Adrienne Palicki, who is an actress who I know she was on Friday Night Lights and really liked on that show. I never saw it. I never saw that Wonder Woman pilot that she did, the one that was kind of notorious. But she was fantastic on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show that I will never go to bat for. It's sort of a show that I wound up watching and have just, for some reason, continued watching, even though I have zero passion for it whatsoever. But she was fantastic on that show and was just like a breath of fresh air when she showed up playing Bobby Morse on that show. And they wrote her out, of course,
sure.
Which did wonders for the show afterwards.
Yeah.
She's great in John Wick when she pops up as an assassin in that. So to see her get, you know, another high profile job, I was excited to see what she did.
Yeah. How did she fare here in the Orville?
To me, she's the only actor who's bringing real gravitas to what she's trying to do. That's what I would say.
I would say when I brought up the fact that there's very problematic elements in this,
yeah.
I think she's the most problematic
yes,
element.
Yes, I agree.
This is your primary female role, and she's defined by the fact that she had an affair, and now no matter what her husband did to drive her away, all she's trying to do is make it up to him.
Yeah.
I think that's an incredibly problematic thing for a female character.
Yes.
And so the material that she's given... it's fine. You know, like
I would say it's kind of embarrassing material for an actress.
No, sorry. What she did with the material
yes.
she was given, it was fine.
But don't you think, like, to me, that's a sign of, like, a born star, is that she can take material that's kind of toxic crap and turn it into something that actually convinces me that she believes it when she's saying it on screen.
Well, I would say...
Like, that, I don't think Seth MacFarlane could pull off that type of thing.
I would say this is a character who has far more potential than other characters presented on the show, but... I probably won't buy her action figure.
What are you talking about?
Are you?
You're implying they'll make action figures, I think, first off.
You already have your 3D printer going.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. Who else did you want to touch on?
No. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Before we get to Seth MacFarlane, which I think that's what you were alluding to there.
Yeah, I think that's the one we have to discuss.
I think the big issue that we brought up, we even devoted an entire episode to this, Cam, but why do Starfleet Admirals suck?
Yeah.
I think they address this head on by casting an actor like Victor Garber, who is effing awesome, and they just made him like a great Admiral sort of character here. And so I thought Victor Garber was great. I'm trying to think...
He was known as Che.
Brian George was fine as like
fine.
A guest star.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that Penny Johnson-Gerald didn't really have much to do.
Right.
You know? I think Scott Grimes has potential for that character. I wasn't nearly as uncomfortable watching him on screen. I didn't think he had like some great lines to share, but I think he's a likable enough actor, and I think he's a good enough actor that when I'm tuning in for at least the next 3 weeks, Cam, I'm wondering if this could become more of a, I don't know about a fan favorite, but somebody that people would appreciate watching week to week, more so than some of the other characters. Some of the characters that I just wonder about, though, is it Bortos or...
Bortus? I actually thought he was fairly good.
Okay.
I thought Peter Macon plays this character, and obviously he's Worf.
Yeah, I know.
But I actually thought he was actually bringing a fair amount. I thought... While I didn't think much of his comedic dialogue was funny, I thought he was delivering it in a way that, boy, if they give him something good, he's going to hit it out of the park. Like, I have confidence in his ability to do that.
Yeah. I just wonder if this character is, like, there's only so many places that he can go.
Right.
Worf didn't really get to become, like, a fully fleshed-out three-dimensional character until they put him on Deep Space Nine, really.
Right.
And it's weird because he's such a fan favorite on Next Generation. And I go back and watch him on Next Generation now, and I'm just like, huh, he really wasn't as interesting on Next Generation as he was on DS9.
Right, yeah, no, very much.
So I'm not so sure about the security officer, you know.
Right.
That fell a little flat to me.
That's, yeah, Alara Catan.
Yeah. Navigator, I don't know, it was weird. Okay, when they had the introduction and he was asking for soda on the bridge.
That was a great gag.
I know, but to me, I thought his delivery was fine. But then when they had the encounter with him and Scott Grimes,
yeah,
then his delivery seemed like off to me. It seemed as if maybe the actors didn't even shoot the scenes together.
I think it's fascinating that this pilot was directed by Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
Because you look at what Jon Favreau did in the original Iron Man, where a lot of the reason people fell in love with that was the way the characters bounced off each other. It was like a 1930s screwball comedy. Like, Jon Favreau, say what you will about him as a visual director, or, you know, a visionary, as I'm sure they would hype him now in advertisements for his latest movie, but he knows how to keep the energy of a dialogue scene going. And so to see him generate scenes like this that just felt so flat was weird to me.
Yeah, but
very strange.
Do you think maybe it could come down to the script? To a certain degree?
I mean, Jon Favreau's known for improv, so it's like, how much was he just not allowed to do that?
I suspect probably not much.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe that's the case.
Was there much improv in the Iron Man script?
There was, yeah.
Okay. But if you've got Robert Downey Jr., yeah. I think you got to have to count
the first
on that.
Two were heavy improv, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe, okay, well, if we're segueing into Favreau, and we can kind of go off of maybe the aesthetics here, what did you make of, say, the production design in this series?
I think in terms of the art direction, like, I think, you know, the concept art would look great on, you know, when you're going over the concept art on the wall, I think a lot of the designs are quite interesting and different. Like, they are obviously evoking Star Trek, but they don't, it doesn't feel like you're staring at the Enterprise, but, you know, with a cube instead of a saucer. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like they'd put thought into designing original ships.
Sure.
To me, more like the translation into broadcast TV with the CG and stuff like that, it just looked very, like, kind of weightless and cartoony. Like, it didn't capture any sort of grandeur to me.
I thought the ship design was maybe better than what we saw in the interiors. Like, I did like the visual effects. It looked updated from, say, the Next Gen era.
Sure.
As well. I do appreciate that Seth MacFarlane's been very adamant about going to models whenever he can.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, like, yeah, the ship-to-ship stuff. What do you think of the overall, just the design of the Orville?
Like, the exterior of the ship?
Yeah.
I actually like the design. I think it's actually... The hardest thing to do is create a ship that you remember what it looks like, you know, after you've turned off the episode. Because,
yes,
you know, you have, I think, a far better memory for ship designs than I do. Because a lot of the Star Trek episodes, like, I just do not remember what the ship looks like once the episode's over. Like,
right.
You know, I do with some. The really memorable, iconic ones will definitely stay with me. But a lot of the ships feel interchangeable. Whereas I think the Orville is actually really well designed in that sense. It sticks with you.
I would say the Orville more so than the Krill ship, where it kind of has that same...
Can't even remember what it looked like.
Yeah, it's kind of that same kind of blocky... It reminded me maybe kind of a cross between, like, the Romulan Warbird and the Klingon battlecruiser from Next Gen a little bit,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I thought the design of the Orville was great. If you go into the interior, though, it had this kind of weird, almost... cheap sort of look to it. If you're looking at the bridge or the corridors or the quarters, I was just like, huh, like, this is the best you could do in 2017. It looked like something straight out of the 90s.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly impressive in that regard. You know, I do wonder how much time went into the design sense of this show. I really do. Versus,
really?
Like, and you know, like, say, when they're putting TNG together or something.
I'm sure, like, a probably comparable, like, amount of time went in.
You think so?
Yeah, I just
wonder, was it just... I don't know how much thought was going into the true world building of this show versus, like, a Star Trek series.
Yeah. But you know what? Go watch early TOS.
No.
When it comes to the world building, they had no idea what they're...
Definitely
they're
not.
Calling it, like, what, the United Earth Space Probe Agency.
Yeah.
There's different names for... It was a Starship class
vessel
that they were on. There's no thought being put towards world building.
It was definitely a kind of make it up as we go along.
Which, and I feel that there's a lot more thought put into world building here than they did for the original series.
I think the difference is when the original series starts, it's 1966, they are very much desperate to compete with film. And so there's a lot of effort put into the visuals of the original series that I didn't feel like there was, say, an insane amount more thought put into creating a visually dynamic show with the Orville than a lot of the other broadcast TV shows.
I think that's difficult because, I mean, this doesn't look like NCIS.
Well, I'm thinking more of the, some of the genre stuff, not like...
But like, what would be a comparable broadcast genre show? I can't think of anything.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., shows like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. looks notoriously crappy, though. I would think that this looks
glossy, and it has that kind of very kind of weightless CG kind of feel to me.
I'm not a fan of the weightless CG.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just don't... Okay, you know what? Battlestar Galactica actually did it quite well, in which they realized the physics of space.
Yeah.
And that space doesn't move, like, the atmosphere, in which... You know how ships in, like, Star Wars, they, you know, kind of do these dog rolls that you'd only see in, like, airspace, where, like, Battlestar actually had, like, a sense of, oh, no, this is how, you know, physics works in space. That's really one of the few, like, TV shows, if only TV show that I've seen do that. And I think that's to the detriment of the Orville, in which it looks kind of, like you said, that sort of weightless sort of look.
Like, there's a sequence at the end of the pilot where Scott Grimes' character is, like, whipping the ship, the Orville, all around the Krill
He's
ship.
Hugging the donkey.
And it just looks like CG zips.
Well, I think the problem is, there's that maybe you're less invested as a viewer if anything can be solved by just making the ship move in a wacky motion.
Yeah, and I tend to find too, when something is very comedic, asking people to be invested in action sequences is tough.
Yeah, I we've had this discussion before. I don't think on the podcast, and I think you come down a little harder than I do.
I think you got to keep them brief. I think once you extend it and ask people to really be on, like, the edge of their seat, like, what's going to happen? That's where you just fall apart.
Like, you're not a big fan of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, but, I mean, I thought that was, like, a fantastic, you know, flick. It actually knew what it wanted to be, and I think visually it accomplished that quite well, and I was invested in that action. But for you, you're just like, yeah, it seems too kind of cartoony. Is that kind of an accurate?
It's like when something is overtly, like, goofy, like, I'm just not invested in whether someone could be hurt. Yeah. Because I'm like, well, it's too light a comedy. I know nothing serious is going to happen.
Okay, well, do you think somebody is going to die by the end of season one of The Orville?
Probably not,
yeah.
Just viewers
one by one. Do you want me to keep you updated on the headcount, Cam?
Sure.
Okay. I'll do that. So aesthetically, this seems... Would it be accurate to say this looks like kind of an updated version of Next Generation for TV?
I don't know. Like, TNG is a little more of a slower, more like balletic.
That's why I say updated version.
Updated. You mean for people with less attention?
Just what you'd expect.
Shorter attention spans?
2017 versus 1994.
I don't think so. I think because there's a certain grandeur to TNG.
Okay.
And this doesn't have that. So you'd have to remove all of that. So you're saying, well, it's not TNG. It's a zippier TNG.
Let's talk about, if we're talking about, you know, the aesthetics, and we had alluded to this, but, like, there's no grandeur to that kind of the motion picture nod where, like, they're approaching the Orville at all? That had no grandeur to it?
Well, it's trying, but no.
There's no grandeur at all?
No, because it just keeps cutting back to Seth MacFarlane kind of cracking wise. I'm like, okay, well, whatever.
Okay.
Like, it sucks the... There's a reason it works in motion picture with Kirk gazing forward, reacting to what he's seen, Scotty looking on, looking at Kirk. You're playing off the actors' faces, the sequence... Zooming in on a CG model or a real model, perhaps in this case, isn't inherently, like, dramatic. It's the combination of the actors, the music. It's everything building to what, you know, would be called pure cinema.
What do you think the music in this?
Well, it was very TNG-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, I don't know. It was.
So this, to you, does not seem like an updated version of, like, TNG aesthetics. What does it seem like to you, then?
It seems like...
What would you compare it to?
I don't know. It seems like kind of just an homage to Star Trekiness. Like, it's that's what I would say. It's a comedic take on Star Trek.
Is it like,
no, it's not the, it's not funny, but right, but it is. But it's not tackling it with the seriousness.
I want to describe it as a comedic take on Star
Trek. It's a light take. Like, it's a tongue in cheek take on it.
This is why I keep going back to this, but like the feeling that it's neither fish nor fowl. You know, sure. Where they don't know, they don't know quite whether it's
pilot. We don't know what it was.
They don't know quite whether it should be going for comedy when it should be going for drama or vice versa. And you
can be comedy drama, but you got to pull the two off or else it gets confusing.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's kind of what the issue is. Like, do they successfully pull off the comedy? And I would say no. There's, like I said, there's maybe three moments where I kind of like smiled. But otherwise, and so then are they going hard for like the drama side of things? I'd say not too much.
I wasn't too invested in whether that technology was going to fall into Krill hands.
Quantum field technology?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that scene in Doctor Strange where he makes the apple rot. This time we got to watch a banana rot.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, to me, it reminded me of that scene in Timescape from Star Trek Season 6 where Picard reaches into the fruit bowl and he gets really long fingernails. It's like, yeah. Now, I think that even...
That was more comedic.
I think that had like a... That may have had a Brandon Braga writing credit, Timescape, or maybe that was a Joe Manosky episode. Right. But, okay. So,
I'm fascinated to see what like Brandon Braga comedy looks like.
I think
I love Brandon Braga. I think he gives great commentaries. I think he has a real withering insight into things. Like personally, I find him hilarious because he has a very dark, cynical look.
Dry.
But I'm curious how he is doing like broad comedy, because like the comedy in this is pretty broad.
It is, yeah.
Very broad.
Well, I think Seth MacFarlane said like in the writer's room, it's a mix of comedy writers and drama writers. Yeah. So I think if you've got that, I wonder how that mix works out. Seth MacFarlane's the one who's in charge of like the script for episode one.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it's going into the writer's room, and we'll see how things turn out over the next 12 episodes.
Right.
So I'm curious, you know, whether maybe the funniest episode of the season is going to have Brandon Braga's writing credit.
That would be so amazing.
Hey, Cam, I'll make you come back to my apartment, and we'll watch that one together.
No, so we've kind of skipped over him so far. Seth MacFarlane, let's get back to him.
Okay.
Seth MacFarlane is an incredibly successful man. He could have me killed in the streets if he wanted to, and no one would blink an eye. He may.
I think pretty much anyone could, Cam. Well, that's no one would blink an eye.
Yeah. He's had a very mixed response so far to being an actual actor in movies, because A Million Ways to Die in the West got a lot of very bad reviews, most of them really taking mean-spirited swipes at him. A lot of the detractors of his Oscar hosting job were immediately targeting him. And just this summer, the movie Logan Lucky came out, and he plays a character with a British accent. We aren't sure if he's British or just it's an affectation, but he plays kind of this obnoxious side character. And I have heard no shortage of reviewers take, again, real swipes at him. So he cast himself as the lead of this show.
Yeah.
Was that a smart decision?
You know what, doesn't matter whether or not it's a smart decision. It was his decision.
Yes.
And I think,
well, he is the exec producer.
And well, I think that's why people have said like this is essentially Seth MacFarlane doing his own cosplay.
Well, it's a vanity project.
It really is. So look,
vanity projects can go horribly awry.
But I don't know, if I had a vanity project, I'd be far more inclined to cast myself as, say, the Mr. Spock character,
right,
than the Kirk character in the situation. Sure. So it just makes me wonder why Seth MacFarlane would do that in this situation. But he's never had like a real leading man role in television, unless you count like the voice work.
Right.
So maybe to him, it's just a new challenge. And I think maybe that's kind of the idea. Like,
well, he's got money to burn, so he can take the risks.
Yeah.
Like if his, you know, leading man on TV career goes belly up, doesn't matter. He's got tons of other, you know, irons in the fire.
Maybe he's not meant to be a leading man, but how does he even know that until he gives it a couple tries?
Like Quentin Tarantino.
I know. Oh, Quentin Tarantino, I think, still thinks of himself as a leading man.
He's not?
Well, you know, but, and I don't know. I think people argue, look, anybody watched Django Unchained? And yeah. It's like, saw Quentin Tarantino doing his Australian accent and that. And he's, I don't know. Like, that to me was uncomfortable to watch.
Right.
You know, or him, like, let's be honest, like, dropping the N-bomb repeatedly in, say, Pulp Fiction.
Right.
That's painful to watch.
Right.
I I keep going back to this. I didn't think Ed Mercer is painful to watch on screen. I think there were a lot of moments that fell flat when it came to the comedy stuff. I thought Seth MacFarlane's fine. I don't watch him and think, oh, this, there's no way this guy could be a leading man.
Right.
You know, I think, and let's be honest, he's a smart, good-looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got a certain level of charisma.
I agree.
Look, if he's a host of the Oscars, you know, you've got to have kind of like all these secret ingredients. This is episode one. Is he coming out of the gate showing the world who he is? We'll have to find out, you know?
I think the problem for me with him as an actor is that I don't think he's a leading man.
Yeah.
Like, he tends to fall inside of, like, a lot of his line deliveries feel very smug to me. And there's a certain superficiality to the way he plays his characters. Like, to me, there's no emotion. I never get emotion off of him. I get a guy who's pretending to be emotional.
Okay, I can see that.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, there's so much insincerity in his performances.
It's almost like a defensive mechanism.
Well, I remember...
Just kind of that smug sort of, like, nothing really bugs me, sort of like, meh.
I remember, like, Ebert referred to that as, like, the comedian's defense. Like, someone who always say, oh, it's only a joke. So, like, they never appear like they're vulnerable. And to me, he kind of brings a little bit of that to every performance. I think he's best in small character roles. I actually didn't hate him in Logan Lucky. I thought it was maybe it fell apart a little bit in how he, you know, ultimately put it across on screen. But I liked that he was swinging for the fences with a weird character. I would actually like to see him do more things like that, where he just tried to really get under the surface of these kind of bizarre individuals.
I remember we walked out of Logan Lucky, and I said to you, Cam, like, I don't know what movie, like, Seth MacFarlane was in. Like, it
may,
like,
not have been the movie for that character.
It threw me off. I actually did kind of come around to it. Like, and I think it was after I listened to, like, a podcast or two where they were just kind of commenting on his performance. And I was just like, I think it was intentionally a ridiculous performance that he put on. I don't think it was just him swinging for the fences and missing. I think it was very intentional on his part.
And you know, Daniel Craig gives a similarly goofy performance.
Exactly.
But you look at the difference in caliber of actor they are. You know,
true.
I mean, obviously Daniel Craig knows how to command the screen in a way that I don't think Seth MacFarlane has figured out.
If he could, do you think Seth MacFarlane would cast himself as Bond?
Maybe, if he could. He might.
Okay. For now, it's just Ed Mercer.
I think, you know, an actor like him would be smart to do the Ray Romano thing, which is that
Deborah. Robert, get out of here. Mom and Dad next door. Oh, no.
But I think he would have been smart to surround himself with real, like, veteran actors and give them the showcases.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of times Seth MacFarlane doesn't do that. He's got himself surrounded by capable actors here, but he's usually the one with the spotlight on him.
So do you think Seth MacFarlane should have cast himself as the Lieutenant Malloy role then?
Maybe.
Who would he have been... In this crew.
You know, it's an issue.
I don't know. He would have been the robot.
In this case, yeah, like in Hellboy 2. He was fantastic in that
That's
movie.
True.
But, you know, the problem is because it's a Star Trek homage, the captain has to bring a lot to the table. It just comes with the job.
You're right.
I don't care who the actor is. I don't care what series it is. The actor has to bring a lot to the captain role. You've got to be the grounding force for this show. And he's a guy who I feel like when responsibility falls on him, he's the guy ducking off to the side, being like pointing at someone else, being like, it was him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not the guy who's like, he's not a leader type on screen.
Yeah, maybe he is just like a character actor. But I think it'd be tough for him if he's doing this, like you say, vanity project where he's creating the show, he's writing it. He's probably going to direct a couple episodes, my guess.
Yeah.
But then he casts himself as, I don't know, technician number one or something.
Right.
Or, I don't know, the Lieutenant Malloy role. I think it would just be like a weird sort of balance for him. I think he created this as a starring vehicle for himself because, like he says at the beginning of the show, he's dreamed of this ever since he was a child.
Right.
So.
Well, I hope he had fun.
Yeah. So, Cam, you will not be tuning in next week.
No.
What if we get to episode 13? And by then, each and every week, I'm filling you in on what's going on. I'm like, Cam, you don't know what you're missing.
I'm not saying, that if I find out, boy, did they turn that ship around. Like, what a fantastic show. I will go back and watch it. But in terms of tuning in week to week, an hour of my time, no, it's not going to happen.
So here's my guess, though. As I we're on episode one.
Yeah.
I think the show tonally.
Yeah.
This is probably what we've got.
Yeah.
I think what they can figure out is how to execute a little bit better. But like I said, I think if you go back to the Boardwalk Empire comparison, it's never going to get into that next, you know, sphere of being exceptional. I think
I really, really liked Boardwalk Empire, so no, I'm kind of blanching at
no,
this.
But you know what? But you watched Boardwalk Empire, but yeah. You've never seen The Sopranos. You've never seen Mad Men. You've never seen Deadwood. You don't know what else TV can do beyond Boardwalk. And when the entire time I was watching Boardwalk, I was just like, I like a lot of this, but they're not getting anywhere close to what they're doing on all these real prestige dramas, you know? And so with them, I don't think they're ever going to get close to next gen, but I think that they can
get close to TNG season one.
or season seven. Maybe this is going to be like getting close to season seven of next gen, which, you know, you have Geordi as the chief engineer. They figured out what to do with him. Beverly's back on the ship. She's not chief of Starfleet Medical anymore. But for whatever reason, season seven just did not quite gel for Next Generation. And I don't know. I see that there's potential for me to watch this week to week and go, okay, sure, that's perfectly fine. I'm not offended by it. I just think that there's a lot of big improvements that need to be made. And I think specifically it comes down to the women roles. I think that's the biggest problem with the show, more so than the comedy, which fell flat for you. Cam, did you hear me like guffaw at any moment?
Not a single one.
So it wasn't like I was just like on my belly, like a seal laughing at like some of these jokes. But I don't know. I see that this is the potential for the show to be a perfectly nice homage to Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Sure, and I guess it. You know, your mileage will vary as to whether you're willing to tune in week to week for that.
I don't know how long I'll be willing to tune in week to week, though. I'm intrigued.
I'm speaking more to the broader audience, not just to you.
But, I mean, I'm intrigued enough to tune in for episode two, and even if that falls flat, I'll watch episode three, which, Cam, early reviews say that episode three is an utter train wreck.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about that in very much the kind of offensive way that...
it sounds like the code of honor of the Orville.
Or like the unexpected, you know, just like kind of the stuff like, oh, what
I don't know that unexpected is as legendarily hated. Like, I feel like code of honor really offends people.
Yeah, but I think unexpected is equally up there with amongst the most offensive Star Trek shows. It's just...
Do you think it's widely seen that way? Or do you think people see it as a bad episode?
No, I think it's mostly people haven't really even seen that episode.
Okay.
No, but yeah, I know what you're saying. And
I feel like people, this isn't more of just like a bad, like almost like ridiculously stupid episode versus something that's like a train wreck of, you know, ill-conceived proportions.
But I think it's mostly, and I'm not trying to... demean any viewer who may not have picked up on this, but I think with Unexpected, a lot of people just aren't clued in to how offensive it is with regards to, like, essentially Trip is like sexually assaulted and it's played for laughs, and then they have some incredibly offensive things to say about women with regards to how Trip deals with pregnancy. It's where he sees a ladder is out of place. He's like, don't you know people could get hurt? And it's like, ha, ha, ha. Women care about children's safety.
Right.
Why are we talking about Unexpected right now?
I don't know.
Anyway.
It's about as funny.
Yeah. Perhaps. Okay, I'll be tuning in for the next few weeks. Cam, not so much for you. But
maybe you should give little Orville minutes, though, on the podcast. Sure. For the next little bit.
Little
nuggets. Okay. Just kind of track the progress of the Orville. Because, look, a lot of people listen to the podcast are going to be watching the show week to week.
And I think the reason why we wanted to do this episode, though, is because we know the Discovery is going to be coming on soon. And I think these shows are going to be compared to each other quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth just tuning in. And
whether Discovery is good or not.
Yeah. And we still have no clue whether Discovery is going to be good or not. I think Discovery will be better than the Orville.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But there's so many issues with with Discovery that I just can't wrap my head around at this point. I don't know whether they're going to be addressing some of the big concerns I have about that particular entry into the Star Trek franchise. But okay, so listeners, I will keep you updated on my progress with the Orville. Cam will not be
right.
That.
No, that's a safe bet.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Tell us your thoughts on the Orville, because you know mine and you know Tyler's, and so I'm curious where some of you stand. Did it work for you? Did the TNG homage aspect win you over, or did you feel like me and just kind of groan a little inside a lot for an hour straight? Let us know. We would love to know. You can also find us on the Facebook. Tyler, where are we?
Yeah, go to facebook.com/subspacepod. Make sure you follow us there. Like us or follow us, because we're posting so much more content, videos, actually like exclusive podcast episodes that you won't be able to get on our usual feed. And guys, Discovery is coming in a few weeks. We are going to be just totally like blowing up with all the additional content that we're going to be producing for Subspace. So make sure you're not missing it out. Just give us a like on Facebook.
I'm very excited for Discovery. I think it's going to be really interesting for this podcast.
Whether or not Discovery is good,
yeah,
we're going to have a lot to discuss here. So if it's a total train wreck, you and I are going to have a lot to chat about. If it's great, I think we're going to be like, wow, how did they get it right so quickly out of the gate?
I feel like, too, I'm just more interested in like a dramatic show that is maybe not doing as well as a comedic one.
Right, okay.
Maybe that's part of my thing, too.
Yeah.
I should say. So, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam? Star Trek The Next Generation turns 30 years old this month.
So we're going to celebrate Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah, we'll give you guys a live commentary. No, I'm just kidding. No, what we want to do is kind of reach back, consider the legacy of the show over 30 years. I think it's worth bringing up whether or not Encounter at Farpoint was a good litmus test for whether you'd appreciate the series going forward. But from there, we're just going to delve into how this show evolved, what a legacy it has produced since then, and maybe where we hope to see it another 30 years. Those actors, I've looked at a couple of them. They look as if they are spry chickens. So I'm looking forward to seeing them at conventions for another 30 years.
Especially Marina Sirtis, because she rocks.
Every single, I've never been to a boring Marina Sirtis panel, so I can only keep looking forward to these for another 30 years.
Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in viewing the Orville will not be my Sunday routine, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, and as in Norm MacDonald had a somewhat okay cameo in this as a giant slime ball.
Very brief, very brief. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.